We've got some Capitol Hill testimony today, of course. Also, something called neobanking from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Wednesday, today, the 13th day of November. Good to have you along, everybody. Yes, fine impeachment hearings. I watched them too. But I also did a little split screen action for a couple of hours because a funny thing happened on the way to Jay Powell's testimony today. Yes, that Jay Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve and chief custodian of this country's monetary policy. Interest rates is what that means. And Powell has said more than once that the Fed is going to keep interest rates where they need to be to keep the economy growing. But here's what Powell said to the Joint Economic Committee on Capitol Hill this morning.
In a downturn, it would also be important for fiscal policy to support the economy.
In other words, taxing and spending, the stuff that Congress and the president do.
However, as noted in the Congressional Budget Office's recent long-term budget outlook, the federal budget is on an unsustainable path with high and rising debt.
$23 trillion of debt and counting as of today.
Over time, this outlook could restrain fiscal policymakers' willingness or ability to support economic activity during a downturn.
So with all of that said, we asked Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman to mind meld with the Fed chair and figure out what he means.
The Fed chair doesn't seem too worried that an economic downturn's around the corner. The recent trifecta of rate cuts probably helped prevent that. Powell's warning Congress about the future recession that's almost certain to come, says Eugene Stewarley at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center.
Because interest rates are fairly low, they have extremely limited capabilities in monetary policy.
Monetary policy. That would be lowering interest rates to try and revive the economy. Instead, Powell's telling lawmakers they'll have to do most of the heavy lifting next time through fiscal policy, boosting government spending, cutting taxes. But we've already done a lot of that, says MIT finance professor Deborah Lucas.
The administration has been deficit spending at levels that you would expect during a recession, not during an expansion like we've had.
So the Fed chair's sounding an alarm.
We're at very high deficit and debt levels. So will the government really be able to do much next time around to pull the economy out?
It's a significant message, but it's a message that the head of the Fed is always trying to deliver.
University of Chicago economist Austin Goolsbee says Powell is saying the Fed's run out of economic ammo, so Congress needs to start saving for a rainy day. At the moment, Congress is scrambling to pass yet another temporary spending bill with no plans for significant deficit or debt reduction. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
As Mitchell was saying, those fiscal policymakers need to agree on a new government spending bill by November the 21st. Check your calendars. That's really soon. Good thing there's nothing else on the agenda, huh? All right. Elsewhere in Washington, a couple of new reports out digging into the tax code. You know, when the tax man cometh, ideally it doesn't matter so much who you are, but how much money you have and how you get it. Tax reality, of course, is a whole nother thing altogether. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that one.
When you fill out your tax return, you don't write down your race or gender. So Mark Mazur at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center says,
you know, on the face of it, the tax system is gender neutral, racially neutral.
But that doesn't mean certain tax rules don't benefit men over women. The National Women's Law Center has a series of reports out today on some of the specific ways this plays out, like in workplace injury payouts.
If it's a physical injury, you have workman's compensation. That's not taxed. That's primarily claimed by men.
Melissa Botia co-authored two of those reports.
If you have, for example, a discrimination or a sexual harassment claim, which is primarily claimed by women, people of color, people with disabilities, that is taxed.
And the way people earn their income can also exacerbate racial and gender divides in how they are taxed. Samantha Jacoby is with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and co-authored another report out today revealing how the tax code, big surprise, favors the wealthy, who are mostly white men.
People who own particular types of assets, such as stock, such as real estate, people who receive lots of income from inheritances also are more favorably treated under the current tax system than people who earn their income from wages and salaries.
There are some parts of the tax code that skew heavily towards benefiting women and people of color, like the earned income tax credit, but advocates argue the tax code still has a lot of catching up to do. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Wednesday, a little bit up, a little bit down. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The newest thing in high tech seems increasingly to be banking. The Wall Street Journal reported this morning that Google is going to checking accounts. There's the Apple Card. Facebook launched a payment system this week, all of which I learned this morning is now called neobanking. We got Molly Wood, the host of Marketplace Tech, on the phone to make me smart about all this. Hey, Molly.
Hey, Kai.
So look, one hates to be cynical, but this is all about data, right? I mean, yes, consumer service, blah, 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 but data, data, data.
Does one really hate to be cynical?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I mean, it is also about, for Google in particular, it's about potentially a new revenue stream as some of those advertising dollars look, you know, less concrete than they used to. But absolutely, this is just another way. It's almost the final frontier in terms of owning the consumer, soup to nuts, every activity that they do in life.
This whole idea of neobanking, which, as I said, was a new phrase to me today. Clearly, I'm behind the power curve. Talk about barriers to entry, right? Can you actually get into this in a substantive way if you're not already some either big tech company or some legacy bank working with a big tech company?
Well, we're seeing a lot of activity in this space. So neobanking has been huge in Europe and Australia for the past couple of years. There have been some regulation changes in the US that aimed to make it a little bit easier. And so we're seeing a lot of startups and then, of course, these big tech incumbents. And there's a couple ways they can do it. One is the way that Google is doing it, which is to partner with banks on the back end. They handle the transactions. They are, you know, all compliant with the regulations that you would expect from a bank. And Google or some other, you know, new startup provides basically a layer of technology, just an interface for your transactions and your behavior. And then, of course, a lot of these companies are applying for their own banking licenses, which is, as you might imagine, a much longer and more complicated process.
Right. This is for the younger consumer, right? I mean, you and I have both been stuck in the supermarket behind that person paying with a check, and it takes 14 days. This is about younger consumers, mobile, being, you know, peer-to-peer. I mean, all that stuff.
Yeah, most of these neobanks are mobile only. They don't have any branches at all. And they are all about being super convenient. They look really good. They might have built-in budgeting tools or automatic savings. They, you know, incorporate payments and I don't know of any other than Venmo that are incorporating a social feed just yet, but I feel like it's only a matter of time.
So future of banking then, right? Because this is where it's all going.
I think it really is. And so the real question is, what happens with these startups? What happens with the regulatory framework? I actually just talked to the chairman of the FDIC about this and how they're going to kind of tackle these. And it's going to be really interesting. On the one hand, you know, the tech ethos isn't necessarily compatible with protecting your money and keeping your data safe, right? If you're talking about moving fast and breaking things,
right.
The thing you definitely do not want broken is your access to your money. And so I think there's going to be a big trust barrier, especially actually with big companies like Google or Apple or Amazon. But this is going to change what happens at banks. They'll be able to absorb some of these features themselves, maybe buy some of these startups, but they are slow moving. And you might see that banks, I don't know, decide they don't want to handle payments anymore. They change their core mission to just lending. But I think it's going to be an interesting couple of years to watch this all play out.
Molly Wood, she is the host of Marketplace Tech. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks, Kai.
The to-ing and fro-ing of U.S.-China trade talks continues, and in the meanwhile, the various sets of tariffs and counter-tariffs and the costs they bring are still in place. In China, a lot of manufacturers are trying to keep their costs down, in part through automation. Marketplace's Jennifer Pack is on that one.
When I say automated workplace, do you picture robots taking over? Like in the sci-fi movie Automation, where a company tries to replace 90% of its staff with robots.
Hello, Jenny. I thought you might like a pick-me-over.
Let's just say the robots ultimately turned on their bosses and things did not end well. At this factory in Dongguan City in southern China, the shift to automation has been far less dramatic. Shuoke manufactures reusable water bottles and soccer balls for Europe, the US, and China. Its production lines are highly automated, but you won't see walking, talking robots at Shuoke, just robotic arms sorting tiny panels to form soccer balls. Felix Du is in charge of marketing at the firm.
In the past, a factory would need 180 workers to manufacture 900 soccer balls a day.
He says robots have helped Shuoke produce three times as much without having to hire many more staff. Currently, just 60 work on the factory floor. The company started automating in 2015, at a time when the labor pool continued to shrink and fewer people from the poorer countryside choose to work in factories. Wages have gone up as a result.
We increase our workers' salaries 8 to 10% each year.
Other manufacturers in the area report even bigger wage increases. And then there are those who have moved out of China to cheaper countries in Southeast Asia. The U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods have speeded up the exodus. But Shuoke has no plans to move just yet, even though its products now face extra duties of 10 to 25% in the U.S., where up to a third of its water bottles are headed. Felix Du, though, says that may not be the case for much longer.
We are now trying to sell more to China to reduce our reliance on the U.S.
For now, Shuoke says the final stages of its soccer balls still need to be finished by hand, by workers like Deng Lijuan.
It's good here, not like other factories that have long hours. Even if I have to do overtime these days, I only have to work until 9 p.m. I get most weekends off so I can take my son out to play.
If she's worried about losing her job to machines, she doesn't list that as a top concern. For her, getting a paycheck on time is the most important thing. Her supervisor, Ding Ling, agrees. She says she's worked at factories that paid 2 months late, and she was given bug-infested food, things, she says, that don't happen at Shuoke. Even so, Ding Ling says she doesn't plan to stay at Shuoke too long.
I'd like to eventually start my own business when my children are older.
Going forward, marketing director Felix Du says his biggest problem will be to find workers with the necessary skills.
Our current production line needs workers to operate robots, do computer coding, test the machines. These jobs all require a higher education.
The challenge, he says, is workers who have the qualifications often don't want to work in manufacturing. In Dongguan City, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It was my birthday, and I got a message from one of my friends saying, did you get that package I sent?
No, because the Porch Pirates got there first. But first, this first, let us do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 92 points today, 0.3%, 27,783. NASDAQ off 3 points, basically flat, 8,482. S&P 500 up 2 points, less than a 0.1%, 3,094. Nike up 2% today. The sportswear company said it's going to stop selling its products on Amazon. Amazon down 1.3% today. Foot Locker stepped up 0.9%. Google and checking, we told you about. Parent company Alphabet dipped less than a 0.1%. Citigroup, one of Google's partners in that venture, shed about 1.5% today. Other banks lower as well. Wells Fargo slipped 1.7%. Jam maker Jam Smucker sweetened 0.6% today despite a downgrade from Credit Suisse. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.89%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. On Corner Office, you're going to hear stuff you're not going to hear anyplace else. Travel tips from Arnie Sorensen of Marriott.
Always be on local time. Always get natural light. Always exercise.
This from YouTube's Susan Wojcicki.
It's great to see the impact that we can have and the responsibility that comes with that.
And Microsoft's Satya Nadella on why it's personal.
I mean, he's in a hospital bed managed with devices and software that we built.
Listen to my conversations with them and more on the Corner Office podcast.
Want to dive deeper into a story you hear on Marketplace? Visit our website at marketplace.org for extra content and analysis. From videos to explainers, we have you covered when it comes to understanding the economy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Keisha Lance Bottoms has been the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia for just shy of 2 years now. That city's got booming technology and entertainment industries. It's got world-class universities. It's a transportation hub as well with a growing metro area population. But with all of that comes some challenges. Mayor Bottoms ran in part on making her city more affordable and livable. Mayor Bottoms, welcome to the program, ma'am.
My pleasure.
This is going to sound like a weird way to start. But we came in through the atrium downstairs,
mm-hmm.
and there's a health fair going on and lots of activity. And I looked over, and there's a customer service desk as sort of the place people are supposed to go to find out where to go here in City Hall. And I just think that's an interesting way to start an introduction to a city office building.
Well, I appreciate that you noticed that. There is a customer service desk, and just on the other side is an office of constituent services.
I didn't notice that.
Saying all that to say, not just to give the layout of City Hall, but as people come in off of the street, we try and make it user-friendly and just to be thoughtful about concerns or challenges that people may have as they walk in the door.
Here's why I asked. We were in another room over there waiting for you to get out of a prior meeting. And there's an interview you gave to Atlanta Magazine right after you came into mm-hmm. office. And one of the things you said was the challenge in this job is making people care. How do you make people care in a city as busy and dense and diverse and robust as Atlanta is?
You know, there was this term that was used for many generations, many mayors before me, that Atlanta is a city too busy to hate. And then you think about Dr. King and the stories that I've heard of when he won the Nobel Peace Prize and the civic leaders and business leaders demanding that there be an integrated gathering to acknowledge and to congratulate this award. I think it goes back to us being a city who cares.
As you take office a year and a half ago, affordable housing is one of the things you campaign on, making this a more affordable and welcoming city. What do you do? How do you get people there?
You know, there's that question, how do you eat an elephant? It may not be the best example,
right? Yeah.
But it really is one bite at a time. And we set a goal of $1 billion towards affordable housing. Now, it was a campaign promise that when I made it, I thought, well, let's really hope I can meet it. And just by not looking at it as a billion-dollar goal, but looking at it in terms of how do we get here step by step, we're already close to $200 million in. It's not just about our minimum wage workers, mm-hmm. but we're also talking about our teachers and our firefighters and the folk who come in here and clean this building at night. We're talking about a cross-section of people.
About those people, the labor force and the kinds of jobs that are being created in this city. There's so much here. There's entertainment with the entertainment tax credits from the state. There's technology here. At the same time, there are service industry jobs. How do you gear a labor plan
to fit all those constituencies of varying skill and abilities levels?
We have created a program with Atlanta Technical College called the Center for Workforce Innovation. So when I'm talking to Ed Bastian of Delta Airlines, mm-hmm. and he says,
we've had him on the show.
We have 10,000 mechanic jobs that will need to be filled over the next 5 years, and I've got to go to Alabama to get them. We're saying we can train these people right here in Atlanta. We're talking with the CEO of Georgia Power, who's saying, I've got lineman jobs that will pay six figures. I don't have anybody trained. We're now able to begin training people for those jobs.
Is this job what you thought it would be when you were running?
I have come to reconcile with myself. I didn't think a lot about the job. I was so focused on winning.
Huh.
I can't say that I really had any expectations. There are a lot more surprises, if that makes sense, because they're just saying,
upside and downside surprises. Yeah.
You know, who prepares you for the largest cyber attack in municipal history in the country? 3 months in, our whole city network was taken down. So that didn't have anything to do with knowing what to expect. That just had to do with my bringing my common sense to the table, which a lot of days is all you have to rely on.
Mary Bottoms, thanks for your time, ma'am. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
One of the defining characteristics, arguably one of the defining characteristics, I guess, of this digital economy is that you can now, with a click or two, get almost anything delivered to your front door. The corollary to that is that you can now get almost anything stolen from your front door, too. You've seen the home security camera footage, right? Somebody walks right up, grabs a box, maybe with the Amazon logo on it, and drives right off. Boom, done. Well, with the high season for holiday online shopping upon us, that is what you'd call a target-rich environment. One place this porch piracy is playing out is Austin, Texas, where, as it happens, there is a new law to stiffen the penalties on these package thieves. Marketplace's Andy Euler is in the Texas Capitol.
At this strip mall in South Austin, UPS store owner Jay Susie is taping up a cardboard box as customers filter in to send packages and to pick them up. Susie runs seven UPS stores in Austin. He started out as a store clerk in the late 1990s. He says back then, people who had packages sent to UPS stores were just seeking a little privacy.
They wanted to come here and not have people know where their address is or set up an address specifically for their business. And now it is. I need a safe place to send my packages.
A safe place for packages because so many people are getting stuff stolen. He says this porch piracy has changed the way he markets his business.
We remind people that, hey, you can receive that package here.
Susie is opening two more UPS stores in the next few months. He says it's too bad, but the threat of package theft is one reason his business is growing. Austin resident Spike Jones had his porch plundered a few years ago.
It was my birthday, and I got a message from one of my friends saying, did you get that package I sent? You know, I got delivered, and I said I never got it.
It was a bottle of gin. It was a bummer, but he says because it was the first time it had happened, he didn't report it to the police.
And then I came home 2 days later, and there was another package that was delivered for my birthday, but it was open, and there was a pocket square and a tie that were laying out there on the porch, which was what was sent me. Apparently, the thieves did not want that.
So Jones had a motion sensor camera installed at his house, and like lots of us, he started having packages delivered to his job. Delivery companies are trying to find other ways to thwart porch piracy. Bonnie Harrison is a FedEx spokesperson.
More people are ordering online, and those shipments have to go somewhere. And quite often it's to people's front porches where they could be left for a matter of hours, in some cases even days. And we know the risk associated with that.
There is a limit to what delivery companies can do, of course. After they drop off a present you sent to grandma, their job is kind of done. Companies like FedEx are giving customers more options and trying to outwit the thieves.
So, for example, you can write instructions for your courier or your driver and ask that he or she, you know, place the package somewhere in particular.
Amazon drivers sometimes try to sort of hide a package, say by wedging it between a couple of trash cans. Then they send a picture to the person who made the order. 26 million Americans had holiday packages stolen from their front porches or doorsteps in 2017, according to a study from Insurance Quotes. In a separate study, security camera Ring found that the average value of packages stolen that same year was $140. A few years ago, Alan Banks had an idea to save people from losing money to porch pirates, and he could do something about it. He's the chief of police in Round Rock, an Austin suburb.
And I said, what better way is have them deliver it to our police department, let us safe keep them, let them come pick them up when they're available to come and pick them up. And that way it eliminates that potential to be a victim.
In 2017, its first year, this holiday shopping season program saw 30 packages delivered to the station. Last year, 380. Banks expects more this year. He's even allocated a second room for storing those holiday deliveries. In Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Should you be worried about getting any of your packages stolen this holiday season, we have got some tips to help you avoid that. They are, of course, at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which Elizabeth Warren goes straight into the belly of the beast, as it were. CNBC reports that Warren has bought ad time on CNBC starting tomorrow for a new ad about her wealth tax on the ultra-rich, 2% of all wealth above $50 million, 6% of everything above a billion. Now, that is not to say that everybody who watches CNBC is a billionaire, but there is some doubling down going on here. Or, you know, she's just trolling them. All right, we're done. Dow Industrial's up 92 today, about 0.3%. NASDAQ off 3 points. We'll call that flat. S&P 500 up 2. We'll call that flat as well. Our media production team includes Sarah Bruguer, Robin Edgar, Drew Jostet, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Jay Siebold, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.